This is Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Lester Graham. Nearly 9 million of Americans' veterans get medical care from the Veterans Administration. It's America's largest integrated health system. And it all began 96 years ago this day with the stroke of a pen and the signature of President Warren G. Harding. We hear the story from University of Michigan medical historian and PBS contributor Dr. Howard Markell. He spoke with Stateside's Cynthia Canty.
Now, we're talking about 1921, so that's fewer than 3 years after the end of World War I. How were things for America's vets then?
Not very good. Now, they were promised as early as 1917 that they would have some form of care as a result of their serving in the armed forces, but that never came to be, and it was always disjointed through the United States Public Health Service and through various pension funds and even a veterans home for the disabled. But it was not the organized integrated system that Americans are used to today.
So it was an unsatisfying patchwork quilt cobbled together.
If you will, not even a quilt because it didn't keep you very warm. And, you know, the federal government, of course, was very different and far smaller back then. And also you had all these men coming back, some 4 million men coming back from World War One, many of them who were injured or disabled in some way, psychologically or physically.
Well, let's go deeper into that. What were some of the biggest health challenges and social challenges that World War I cohort of veterans was facing?
Well, a variety of very unique problems. To begin with, there was the influenza epidemic of 1918, and there were many men in the armed services who contracted this terrible influenza because they are all living in crowded conditions, and they had all sorts of sequelae or problems after the fact, depression, pulmonary or lung problems, weakness, and so on. There's also a terrible weapon called mustard gas, which the Germans used quite a bit on the Allied forces, and that really destroyed and scarred lung tissue and vision and other problems. So there were physical disabilities, bullets, of course. There were other infectious diseases that people could get in the trenches, so to speak, most famously trench foot, because you're sitting in wet boots and wet uniforms in this muddy water, and it could cause fungal infections of the feet and even amputations of the feet. So you had people with one leg or one arm as a result of their serving in the armed forces or worse, and not very good physical medicine and rehab type services because they weren't invented yet. And then most interesting, at least to me, is what was called combat fatigue and people who were psychologically damaged by being in the throes of war. We now know it as post-traumatic stress disorder. It's very real, it's very debilitating, and it's very serious, but we didn't have the knowledge about these problems at the time.
So you come home from being in the trenches in Belgium, and here you are kind of supposed to reintegrate, but you didn't have the kinds of things that we think about today as available services.
Yeah,
that
nobody really cared. They moved on. They had moved on. It was the Roaring Twenties. And nobody wanted to hear about what happened in Flanders Field. And also the people who stayed behind. This is where, by the way, the word slacker comes from. It's not a new word. It's for those men who did not go into World War One, into the armed services. They were called slackers. But if they stayed behind, they got a leg up on the occupational journey of jobs. And so these people came back, these men came back to find their jobs taken up by slackers. So that was something that was a sore point as well.
So where did the impetus begin to actually create something that was unified that could help them?
So on August 8th in 1921, when Warren Harding signed it into order that there would be a Veterans Bureau. It did not become the Veterans Administration until the Reagan administration, when it became an actual part of the president's cabinet. And the head of the VA is the Secretary of Veterans Administrations now. But it started the next day on August 9th, and a man named Charles Forbes, who was the head of the Bureau of War Risk Insurance, because a lot of the things that existed for veterans were really insurance policies, not health care per se, but pensions. And this man, Forbes, gathered together all these various cogs in the federal wheel, which is not such an easy task, this agency, that agency, and so on, and built out of it, cobbled out of it, what we now know today as the Veterans Administration. And that included building hospitals and clinics that were specifically designed for the care of vets and their health problems.
And it's interesting, as I read your account of the birth of the VA, to get this single unified government agency launched, the Veterans Bureau, it was truly a bipartisan effort.
It was. The vets were very good at complaining to their congressmen and to their senators. And there was a great deal more cooperation in the 20s. I mean, the good old days were never as good as people really like to think. But there was at least some cooperation, and people from across the aisle spoke to one another. And this was something both sides could get together, that we need to do something for those men, and now our men and women, who serve in uniform.
What worked well and what didn't work so well in those early days of the veterans' hospitals?
Well, what worked particularly well was the notion that you need specific hospitals that have physical medicine facilities, prosthetic facilities, and long-term psychiatric and psychological care for people who served in the military. The pension and insurance systems did not work all that well and had to be reinvented and reinvented across time. What didn't work well was the internecine battles between all these government agencies who were losing their power, losing their turf to be subsumed under this Veterans Bureau. And Charles Forbes, who was doing all this, was attacked viciously. Mm-hmm. And now, don't forget, the Warren Harding administration was not exactly known for, not taking bribes. That was not...
Let's just say there was a lot of corruption in the Harding era.
Yeah,
yes.
Very few people know exactly what Teapot Dome was, but it was a scam about bribes over an oil field. And there was a lot of graft. And Charles Forbes was accused of taking contracts that were to his benefit rather than the veterans. He actually was sentenced for over a year to Leavenworth, the original big house. Mm-hmm. But he maintained his innocence. And in fact, historians have demonstrated that he probably was not guilty at all. He probably did not do what he was accused of doing. But there was so much graft going on in the Harding administration that many members of his cabinet were accused of doing bad things.
Through the years, VA doctors, VA nurses have really pioneered the kind of treatments that we all take for granted, such as?
Well, you can begin with the treatment of trench foot. And you can begin with, now a lot of us who have a bad knee or a bad hip or what have you go to a physical medicine and rehab doctor. But that specialty developed out of war injuries. My great uncle Joe spent his career working as a rehab specialist at the Allen Park VA, and his patients were people who lost legs or arms or both or all. And we now benefit from all of that. And we are finding with post-traumatic stress disorder that the VA hospitals really pioneered in that field. It's a disease not so much of remembering, but an inability to forget. And these loops in your brain are developed that you get very panicky and upset and nervous and a lot of physical symptoms when you are confronted with anything remotely close to that experience. It's very real. It's very debilitating.
And isn't it interesting that these problems that you're talking about are exactly what returning veterans, say, from Afghanistan and Iraq have been dealing with, are dealing with?
Yep.
Not in the past.
Yes. And it's not, it doesn't just benefit. What we found from history is that the stuff that we're learning at the VA system for vets doesn't just benefit vets, that it has been expanded to the society at large. So I mentioned rehab medicine, but you could argue that there are an awful lot of people with post-traumatic stress disorder who never went to Afghanistan or Iraq, but had their own tragic circumstances occur, and we are learning more and more about this very real entity because of their work, the VA work.
And here we are, 96 years later. What do you see as the questions that we should be asking about the VA?
Well, one question is, do vets need a separate health care system that is segregated from the general health care system? And that's a question of economics and of how do we fund health care in America, something that we still haven't quite.
We're wrestling with that. Yeah.
It changes almost daily. It's very hard to keep track of that. That's an economic question. A more a broader philosophical or social question is, how do we honor, how do we take care of those men and women who protected and defended our liberties and freedom. I think that's a very important task. I think these men and women have done a remarkable job that very few of us have done, and they deserve to be honored and cared for. No matter what happens to them over there.
Good thoughts on this 96th birthday of the launch of the Veterans Administration. Dr. Howard Markel, University of Michigan medical historian and PBS contributor. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.